History through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, presented on the air and online by the U.S. Army, proudly honoring the men and women from every branch of our armed forces whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are some stories out there, stories that we need to hear that should not go untold. And we want to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice. We want to preserve their stories so we never forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And along the way, we always learn so much. We're educated, we're entertained, and often inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. I'm in San Jose, California today with 96-year-old Forrest Hilton. He's lived in San Jose for more than 70 years. The Del Monte Canning Company sent him here. But there was another outfit he was working for before that. In World War II, he was a Navy man, and he participated in landings you've heard a lot about over the years, and we'll hear about it from him. But let's start earlier than that, Forrest. What was it like in Pine Bluff, Arkansas? You're an only child? Or were you a busy boy?
I was pretty much a hunter and fisherman when I was a child. I liked to fish and catch a little fish for the table and hunt for opossums and raccoons and squirrels, tree squirrels that we ate. That was part of the diet that we had. And the Depression was on from 1929 when the Depression started, and it was pretty hard to make a living. Some men worked for 10 cents an hour and lucky to get a job. Just wasn't much work. And we stayed there till around 1937 when we come to California. Our first stop in California to work or look for a job was in Kingsburg. We had a Model A Ford sedan and a little two-wheel utility trailer that we had all of our belongings in. And our first work was cutting grapes, raisin grape, Thompson seedless grapes. We began to get a little money in our pocket. We landed in Kingsburg with $7 to our name. Wow. Did have an uncle in Arkansas that if we got down to where we couldn't eat, he would send us a little money, but he didn't have very much either. But anyway, we started prospering, working in the fruit, pick peaches and grapes, and then we did go to Exeter for olives. Then eventually we ended up in Monterey. My mother worked in the cannery there, and my dad would hit and miss on whatever he could get. Then along, it was beginning to get some jobs around for getting ready for the war. So we went back to Arkansas, and I had an uncle that got me a job of learning to operate tractors and earthmoving equipment, because it was building right out of Pine Bluff a large arsenal where they was going to build war machines. So I worked there for a while, and then we had a bad winter, and I decided to come back to California. So I come back, and I had got in the Operating Engineers Union, so I did get a job as a tractor driver. And then the war come along, and I remember you, on some of your programs, you'd ask if the person remembered where they were and what they was doing when Pearl Harbor was attacked. Well, I know exactly where I was. We lived in Pacific Grove. A second cousin of mine and myself used to like to go target shooting with a little 22 rifle. So that day, that Sunday, he and I went out in the Carmel Valley and popped a few rounds with a 22, and we come back home. When I drove in the driveway, my dad met me. Hey, son, we're bad news. What's that? The Japanese have attacked Pearl Harbor. Pearl Harbor? Where's that? and he didn't know any more about it than I did. But it was on the radio anyway, and President Roosevelt was making his speeches, and everything was Pearl Harbor. And we were actually, Fort Ord was already built. And my dad worked at Fort Ord building and removing a cavalry outfit. There was a horse cavalry down there between Monterey and Salinas. So they abandoned the cavalry, and Fort Ord was a large fort, a training center. And then I didn't go in the Navy right away. I got a job lengthening a runway on the Monterey Airport. The Navy had taken it over, so we had to lengthen the runway for the airplanes because it was just a little small, hardly any airplanes flew in there before the war. And I got in a little accident there one night. Everything was blacked out. As soon as it started to get dark, everybody had to close their drapes, their windows, and turn off the lights, and no street lights in Monterey.
And the reason for people who wouldn't understand this or can't follow you is there's this fear, this concern that the Japanese are going to attack the mainland, and Monterey's right on the coast, so you're turning everything off so you're not a target for the Japanese, right?
That was it. So they had Fort Ord started moving their artillery over to ward off any invasion, and it was a real busy place going on, but in the dark. So I ended up, I was a 1A in the draft, but I had deferment as long as I was working there on that airport. And one night I had everything blacked out, and I run into a truck. It had stalled out in the middle of the spread where you'd spread in the dirt. I guess he'd broken an axle or something. I never knew because I wasn't around much longer after that. And I did hit the side of this water spray truck that would spray the water on our fresh dirt that we was spreading. And kind of lost control of the vehicle. I was running a turnip pull. So the grade foreman, he got all upset and used some pretty bad language to me, and I was just a kid, you know, and so I told him, I said, oh, I don't have to take this kind of foolishness for what you're saying, and I quit. And he told me I couldn't quit. He said, you're froze. If you quit, I'll have you in the Army within a week. So I told him, well, do whatever you have to, but I'm going home right now. And I went home, told my mother, Mom, I gotta go. So I went to Salinas, went to the city hall where they had recruiting stations. And first stop I saw, I guess it was a sergeant or something, the Marine Corps, but I didn't want to go in the Army. I just, something told me not to go in the Army. So this man, he looked up and said, is there something I can do for you? and I went over and put my hands on his desk. He told me, get your hands off my desk. Stand up like a man. He said, what do you want? You want to join up? And I told him, no, I just thought I'd stop by and say good morning. And I walked down there, and he told me, come back here. And I told him, well, you can't tell me what to do. I'm not in the Marine Corps now. So I guess I might have been a little smart aleck guy, kid. So I went down the hall just a little ways, and there was a Navy recruiting station. And there was a man in there sitting at a desk. And he got up and come shook hands with me, asked me if you'd like to join up, and I'd like to join up. So that's the way I got in the Navy. That afternoon, I had gone back to Monterey and left my car, and I got my cousin to take me back to Salinas, where I caught the train to go to San Francisco. The next day, we went through all it, because I already had my physical information from my draft board. So it was pretty easy for that. So it just went in, and so they put us through a more physical and mental questions that they gave me. And so right away, well, there was a whole bunch of us that day. That night, they swore us in, and they sent it by train to Los Angeles that night. From the Los Angeles, they went by bus to San Diego boot camp. I think I was probably about 2 weeks or maybe 3 weeks into the boot camp when a man come over. We was out on the grinder marching. So they stopped this march for this man to say what he was there for. And he was asking for volunteers for the amphibious force for the landing craft school at Coronado. So I volunteered, and two other guys, I didn't know them, but they volunteered. They were full adults. They wasn't kids like most of us was. So I went through the landing craft school, learning how to get the boats in to the beach and let the ramp down and bring them back up and get out without being capsized and back out. You'd go straight in, back out. Oh, it was no, if you could drive a car, a little bit of training and you could master it, you know. Wasn't too much to it. They did have, I guess, about four LCPRs, I think they were at that time. And they had a couple LCMs, the twin-engine tank gliders. So and the rest of it was all sagebrush and a couple tents. They'd take us over for the day, but they'd They usually leave maybe four guys there to be on guard duty, guard the boats, and make sure that nobody tampered with the boats. They'd just pull them up on the beach. And it was interesting, and I began to like it. And then we went for some training at Oceanside Advanced Marine Combat Training Center. I guess it's Camp Pendleton now. It was just to give us a little ability to protect ourselves in case we lost our boats and on an island there on a landing. We learned to fire machine guns and throw hand grenades, and because if you lost your boat, you could protect yourself a little bit. You just have to go in with the Marines. But I never lost a boat, and when I went aboard Haywood, I was in 14 different landings. I have six battle stars. The ship has seven. But anyway, we went ahead and had our landing in Attu. That worked out pretty successful. But the Army took a real beating on, they didn't have the proper footwear, shoes, waterproof shoes, and there was snow on the ground, and they got their feet wet, and it was cold, and the fog would be so heavy you could hardly see your hand before you. A lot of these men froze their feet, and they had to have them amputated, because they come right aboard that ship. That was a hospital evacuation ship. As soon as we get the troops off of the ship and their supplies off, well, they'd set it up to start receiving casualties from the beach. And we'd have a large surgical staff and doctors would come aboard the ship just for that landing that we was going to make. And just in case they was needed, in which most cases they were needed. Because a lot of casualties from the Marines. We operated mostly with the Marine Corps. 2nd Marines and 6th Marines.
So we all understand your role in this. So you are piloting one of these landing craft and taking those Marines into the beach and then taking casualties back?
Well, right after Attu, I decided I wanted to get, not drive the boat, but be a boat engineer. That was a little more important. Keep those engines running. And I put in to transfer into the engineer's department, be in the engine room when we was underway. And when we'd go into landing, then I'd be relieved and I could go back in the boats, and I was in a salvage boat, and that was one that would, we'd go in with the first wave of boats and be there in case anybody got in trouble. But I did stand watches in the engine room, and I learned a lot. Everybody was very helpful, and that ship had four 325-pound superheated steam boilers and two Elliott turbines engines, high pressure and low pressure engines, 4,500 horsepower each. I enjoyed everything except going back and checking the bearings on the propeller shaft in the shaft alley when you was in enemy territory. Especially, we had two guys. I was a port oiler, and there was a down on the second deck down. There was a starboard oiler. We had to take turns on every hour. One of us would have to go back and check the bearings on the main propeller shaft. I didn't like that, because when you go in that propeller shaft, they would close the door on you, and you couldn't unlock it from the inside. After you made your trip and come back to the door, you would just ring a bell. They had a button there, you'd push a button, and the other man would open the door for you and let you out. Then you'd close that door and lock it down again. I didn't like that. That was a little scary. I could see that I'd never made a submarine man.
But there would be even scarier moments ahead for Forrest Hilton in the Pacific when we come back, more of what he experienced in the Aleutians. And also, November 1943, the Battle of Tarawa, and how he helped save a damaged cruiser the following year in the Battle of Leyte Gulf. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this. Do you ever have those moments where you realize you've been settling for less than the best for far too long? Sometimes we just accept the status quo without looking around for better ways to do things. And I've got to tell you, when it comes to your money, I believe I found a better way with EECU. Take a look at myeecu.org and you'll see why. EECU is not a bank. It's a nonprofit credit union that's all about taking care of you, the member. That's one of the reasons EECU just keeps growing and growing. Close to 300,000 members now in 10 different California counties. Over 30,000 ATMs, free mobile banking. And what I really love is how EECU always goes above and beyond to serve the community. In 2013, the leadership and generosity of EECU helped establish Central Valley Honor Flight. More than 1,000 veterans now have gotten to see their memorials in Washington, D.C. for free. And that's just one example of the community involvement EECU takes oh so seriously. Pick up the phone and become a member today. 1-800-538-3328. That's 800-538-3328.